Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Happy holidays and welcome to Quest for Gold. We are now 42 days away from the opening ceremonies in Milan Cortina. I'm Ryan Burrow. The U.S. biathlon team is taking shape for Milan Cortina. Maxime Germain was named to his first Olympic team following the World Cup men's individual competitions in France, his home country, although he skis for the U.S. He joins Campbell Wright, Margie Fried, and Deidre Irwin as the first four qualifiers on the team. We had a chance to talk to Deidre a few weeks back where she talked about her love for donuts.
So donuts have always been, I have this amazing hometown bakery in Pulaski, Wisconsin. Shout out to Shmarava's, Polish name and everything. So good. And so I think since a young age, I've always just loved donuts. And so as they were like, create a bio, what are your favorite things and what are your favorite foods? It's just always been for me, donuts, donuts, donuts. So yeah, I think I put on my Instagram profile, I was like, we'll race for beer and donuts. Yeah. I think that's just the epitome of Wisconsin. Me, my personality, Wisconsin. Exactly. I'll race for Packers tickets too, if anybody wants to, like, you know, send me to a game.
U.S. Ski and Snowboard had to move the dates of the Intermountain Health Freestyle International presented by Stifel. It was originally supposed to take place at Deer Valley Resort, but due to unseasonably warm weather, the Aerials and Moguls World Cup events have been moved to mid-January. The organization says the change is designed to ensure critical qualification opportunities in an Olympic year. Alex Ferreira started his 25-26 winter campaign out on top of the podium in the 2025 Free Ski and Snowboard Halfpipe U.S. Grand Prix. That was in Copper Mountain, Colorado. American B. Kim finished third. Coming up this week, the Cross Country Tour de Ski, a stage competition made up of World Cup races through January 4th in Italy. Jessie Diggins is competing in that. This is her last season before retirement. Michaela Schifrin enters the last stage of the Alpine Skiing World Cup in 2025. That's in Austria. Ryan Cochran-Siegel is competing in the Super G on the men's side. And that's in Italy. The same site, actually, as the freestyle skiing and snowboarding events. In previous episodes, we've discussed how Team USA is supporting athletes financially, with mental health, and in using technology. But in this episode, we focus on another tool the USOPC has deployed to help get the most out of our athletes, sleep. I had a chance to talk with Dr. Emily Clark, Senior Psychological Services Provider at USOPC, who's been working with athletes and teams on enhancing their performance by using the one thing that most of us don't get enough of.
So I was at the Team USA Media Summit, and you were talking about this cool program focusing on sleep and athletes. And I mean, it makes a lot of sense. We focus on, obviously, physical health. We've talked a lot in recent years about mental health. And this kind of folds into both of those, I would guess.
Yes, it's really kind of an underpinning of health and well-being as well as performance. And I think it's gotten a lot more attention in the last, I'd say, like 5 to 10 years within the elite athlete population. But sleep can be really a critical component of kind of the longevity, the kind of illness prevention, the performance, kind of sustained high level performance elements that we would look for a Team USA athlete. And I think really we wanted to leverage an interdisciplinary team of people with a lot of expertise in the area of sleep to create some broad programming for Team USA athletes so that they get useful information that they can apply across a really broad range of contexts so that they feel a little more empowered to utilize that as a lever of performance and well-being for themselves. So we've done our best to try to create a kind of net of different education and intervention strategies for Team USA over the last few years.
Were you a part of USOPC at that time, or did they come and find you and say, let's do this? How did it kind of come about?
Yeah, that's a great question. No, I came on in 2021, and our senior director, Jeff Bartley, started the mental health department that was within sports medicine, and it was kind of parallel to our sports psychology department, which is in sport performance. And I got hired on at that time to kind of support mental health across Team USA. And really, as we started doing the screens for athletes before games. And then kind of as part of their pre-participation exam, we screened for a number of mental health concerns, one of which is sleep. And that was pretty routinely the highest level of distress that athletes endorsed. And so then that led to, okay, if we really want to leverage sleep as this useful thing that's mandatory for all humans, kind of how would we go about doing that? And I have some training in cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, and I'm by trade training a psychologist on staff. So I'm a co-lead on our sleep working group that we put together with Dr. Bartley as well. And then we kind of gathered a group of physiologists, dietitians, strength and conditioning experts, some research folks from our team, and some medical providers, and then a couple outside experts that were really specific to sleep. So we tried our best to gather kind of sleep-specific information with a lot of really applied sciences perspectives within the Team USA ecosystem, because that is a little bit different than kind of an NCAA system, or, you know, as you'd imagine, the professional leagues that we see kind of domestically. So there tends to be lots of long-haul travel, lots of international competition, really long seasons, a quad system, a broader age range that you see. So there were just some kind of unique factors that we wanted to consider. And I think given my training background, I was well positioned to kind of lead that group up.
Is there a difference between a bobsledder and a figure skater and a you know, alpine skier? I mean, as far as how you approach or how they approach sleep?
Yeah, I mean, for me, when we think about the sleep, we look at the like healthy sleep consistently over time. We tend to think about quantity and quality. And I think, you know, the sport context is a huge piece of how those kind of learnings get applied. So if you think about training times, or you think about skill sets that they use within their sport demand, like a power sport or an endurance sport or a precision sport, sleep can show up differently in those settings. So I would say the broad education and underpinnings tend to stay the same. And really where we would differentiate is kind of how are you navigating your sport context and how does that impact your sleep, i.e., trying to give an example. There are some teams that will compete kind of around the world in rapid succession. And so you may be transitioning multiple time zones pretty quickly. And then there are some, you know, sports that will train from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. or have a competition during that kind of like broadcast window. And so those kinds of sport specific contextual factors really impact how someone might apply the broad level learning, and then may also impact kind of how we work with staff coaches or the ecosystem around the athlete to facilitate some helpful changes if possible.
Is it as simple as getting 8 hours a day, or are you telling people, okay, it's nap time? It's you just finished your first, your first ice time, and now it's time to take a nap before your second ice.
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, it's, you know, it is kind of these broad recommendations around quality and duration. And then it's also troubleshooting kind of when things aren't going well. We look at, is this a beliefs, behaviors, environmental or biological concern? And so we'll do a screening process to kind of triage what intervention does this need, right? Is this environmental, and we can make some adjustments to kind of the way in which your sleep environment is set up, or is this biological? And we need to refer for something that our clinic isn't capable of treating. And so we kind of go through a screening and triage there, and then we'll decide on an intervention, kind of on an individual case by case basis based on the athlete need. But that said, we do a lot of broad based education. Like starting at kind of our landing page, usopc.org/sleep, has some great resources that are kind of like, broadly speaking, what does healthy sleep look like? Right, sleep changes across the lifespan. Like, when are you likely to be interrupted in your sleep patterns? So we have a lot of parents on Team USA that, you know, you may not see in kind of an NCAA setting or in other professional settings. So there's some elements that are specific to kind of how sleep may change in different contexts. Managing travel and sleep. Kind of sleep myths, right? Like, do I need to get 8 hours every night? Or what do I do if I don't? Or when I'm short on sleep, how can I make adjustments that are useful? So kind of all those Right, beyond the kind of broad base, what's likely to come up in the elite athlete setting that may impact our Team USA athletes more specifically?
I know over the counter, is it melatonin? I mean, that helps you all. But is that an issue with these athletes? Is it something that's going to test negatively toward them? I mean, they got to be careful too what they put in their bodies if they're trying to rush or force sleep, I would assume.
Yeah. So there's a number of different interventions within the psychopharm area. Melatonin, I would kind of keep separate. It's a naturally occurring hormone in the body. It's released kind of at levels of low light, and it promotes sleep onset. So some people can take it exogenously, and it's helpful. And we recommend that before or during travel in terms of shifting your sleep phase if you're trying to adjust your circadian rhythm. But in terms of like a nightly sleep aid, wouldn't recommend it. But I tend to refer people to their prescribing provider to kind of navigate acute sleep loss or sleep disruption if they are interested in a pharmacological intervention. We want to make sure that no one's going to be overseas in a highly stressful competitive environment and stand to lose or run out or not be able to use the strategy that they've been dependent on. So we'll kind of, you know, make sure that that's an option for them, you know, across the border, that there's never a chance where that could backfire. But that would be kind of the farthest my recommendations would go there.
I got to imagine telling a bunch of, I mean, let's face it, you know, teenagers to 30-year-olds, that general population, you know, has a hard time sleeping in the first place. So now you throw a fact of being, you know, a high caliber athlete in there, and that could make it more challenging. Has it been well received?
Yeah, I mean, I see a couple of things regularly. I think it's been very well received because I do think sleep disruption can be really distressing, right? If you don't really understand how sleep works, or you don't know how much sleep you do or don't need, we sometimes start ascribing every feeling of fatigue to being sleep deprived. And that's not necessarily the case of what's happening. And so I think, you know, to add on to it, the general daily stresses of life can start to erode our natural sleep window. So sometimes we'll just do kind of a reverse intervention of kind of saying, what can you take off your plate? Or are there times where for performance it really matters and we want to protect those times, where it doesn't have to be all or nothing, but if we can establish kind of a baseline level of what sleep you need, then we can be more thoughtful about where we augment that or where we, you know, make some reprioritization decisions closer to competition. And I think that's really the primary thing that's important with athletes, is that we're pragmatic and that we're flexible. Like, it does not have to be rigid rules around, you know, you're doing it wrong if you're not sleeping this amount at these times. It's really helping them understand, you know, what's my dose of sleep that I need, or what's my, you know, my standard sleep opportunity that I need to be making room for. And then where do I need to be flexible when I am, you know, in a position to have kind of training or competition outside of that sleep or close to that sleep window, or I have a red eye flight and I'm going to have some sleep deprivation on board that I need to work with or compensate for. So we tend to, you know, try to be really flexible with what we offer, what we recommend. And then we try to prioritize it. Like, if you can do one thing, do this thing. If you can do two things, do these things. These will be your bang for buck. So that then when they're in different contexts, they know which levers to pull and how to do it effectively.
So are the athletes coming directly to you then, or is it through coaches or
great
some
question.
Of these teams?
That's a great question. I mean, as part of our, so we're a huge ecosystem of, I think we're at 50 or 52 NGBs at the moment, and we interact with all of them a little bit differently. So the goal was to create lots of different touch points for people to kind of come into a sleep consultation if they needed it. One of those ways is the screens that are directly to athlete, where they fill out a brief screen about sleep distress, and then they'll get an outreach if they endorse sleep distress. Some of it is through a coach. Some of it is through, right, we have kind of like general resources and then games related resources. So right now for the athletes going to Milan Cortina, they'll get an opportunity to do sleep consultations. Some of it is supporting the staff around the athlete. So we can train staff on how sleep works and what the important elements are and where disruption happens and how to intervene appropriately. They're more likely to support you know, Team USA athletes that are on the road with them, and kind of understand where, again, the value add really is in terms of beliefs, behaviors, environments, and biology. And then I think some, yeah, there's like self-referral screens, ecosystem, games related. And then we do a lot of kind of like warm handoff from around the system, where if someone's kind of worried about sleep disruption, we'll get an internal referral from a colleague. More recently, we've started really doing more research. And so that's another way that we've gotten more, really like self-referral to wanting to do further consultation around sleep. But ideally like through a number of different doors based on where the person is and their season or, you know, their need for intervention.
I just spoke with Ethan Seprany, a speed skater, and he told me that he learned every time you feel like everybody hates you, it's probably because you're not getting enough sleep. That was his takeaway. So I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but that's what he told me. He's like, yes, it's very important.
I love that. That's great. Yeah, check out the thoughts. All right, like irritability, rate of perceived exertion, our emotional tolerance for frustration, those things kind of change when we are overly sleep deprived. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we can be even more specific too of like the reaction time or problem solving that takes a little bit more to decline. And then the physical output or strength that takes a little further to decline. So if somebody's feeling kind of tense or irritable, that can be a good indicator to intervene then or take a quick nap. But they can also rest assured that your sleep is resilient. You'll get what you need, or your body takes what it needs, and that, yeah, your physical performance can be a little more insulated, even with a bit of sleep loss.
We are all basically grown up toddlers, right? We all need our naps eventually when we get angry. So when does the heavy pull come for the Olympics then? When do these athletes need to start getting onto, you know, obviously the time zones and travel, and when does that all begin?
Yeah, it's a good question, because for Paris, we rolled out our sleep consultation process, which was really individualized and really education and then intervention around travel and kind of athlete-led goals. And what we wanted to do differently for Milan was really include sleep education up front, so that if they wanted to make changes in their sleep, they could do so before they're in the window of departure. And so the education came about 6 months in advance. And at that time, if people wanted to make changes to sleep, they could do so with a consultation. They could do so with one of our staff members. And then similar to Paris, everyone will get the opportunity if they want to consult during their, we do a pregame screening where they do a kind of a medical history and a mental health screen. And at that time, they'll get offered an option to address sleep as well. So they'll get the option to kind of learn about and make changes to behavior if they want to, or they can just ask for a follow-up post-games if they're like, I'm good, I don't want to change anything now, but I am interested down the road. And then in terms of like travel, really this year we're in concurrence with our sports med team working on illness and injury prevention before the game. So the goal that if they can get to the games healthy, we are more likely to have the performances that we want, correct? So sleep is an element of that, where ideally we would have everybody leaving for the games well rested. And then based on what their individual demands are, they can decide whether they want to transition their time zone before they depart, or if they want to wait until they get there. If they've built in time to acclimate, they can do that too, and kind of be really specific about how they want to address, you know, the 8 hour or the 5 hour time zone, depending on where they're coming from. But I will say a lot of winter sport athletes will get to Europe for their season prior to the games. And so we're not seeing as many transatlantic flights as we did for Paris. So I imagine a lot of that will be handled on the front end before they, sure, they attend the games.
There are probably some disadvantages to Olympic Village as far as the sleeping ability. People are coming and going. I assume you guys are kind of scouting out what that looks like. Do they room up? I think I remember in some Olympics, various team athletes from different sports would room together, and so schedules would be a little off.
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know that. Well, we're going to have six villages in
Yeah, this is a
Mallorca,
little
so
different this time
it'll be
around,
a
yeah.
little more mitigated in that sense, and different circumstances village to village. Like some will have less of a village, so to speak, and more kind of hotel or like they won't be necessarily clustered in a village. But we did partner with a mattress company called Sattva, and they're gonna supply mattress toppers for that reason. So that when we do think about kind of the environmental piece, at least the comfort of a sleeping environment can be a high level. Typically it is twin beds. Typically you do have a roommate. Typically, you may or may not be in a place where temperature is controllable. I think in Paris, we talked a lot about the heat going
Yes.
into it. And here we'll see kind of among the different buildings, like what people experience. But that's certainly a consideration for how that'll impact sleep and then how people want to navigate it. So, our approach is to be as flexible as possible and then train whatever you're going to use in competition. So if you are using an eye mask or earplugs, or you might have, a roommate that's up at different times, or potentially, right, maybe they're a snorer, or maybe they talk in their sleep or something, that you can be flexible to manage to the environment in a way that's going to keep your performance intact to the best of your ability. And give you some agency, right? That you can control your environment or can make a decision here that's going to facilitate rather than feeling frustration or anxiety about the impact there.
Do you have a program that you adhere to, or maybe which you did a little bit more?
I do, yeah. So I'm a 41-year-old woman, so I'm in a specific age bracket where my sleep needs look a little different than maybe our NCAA athletes within the Team USA group. But I tend to give myself an appropriate sleep window, like roughly around 8 hours. I tend to keep that pretty stable, where if you can set your rise time by the first dose of light, I wake up at the same time every day, whether it's a weekend or a weekday. I will use naps where like 20 minutes to, I don't really ever use 90 minute, but the recommendation we make is like 20 to 90 minutes within the 1 to 4 p.m. time window. I think that'll augment for any days that are shorter than I'd like. And then when I travel, I do tend to, if we're going east, I'll back up my wake time so that I'm getting some of the time zones out of the way, where when I land, I'm prepared to perform right away, as opposed to kind of struggling to get onto the location time zone. And then I think there's a lot around, there's not always things we can control, right? Whether it's a child or a pet or construction out the window that's going on overnight for some reason. Like if I miss a night of sleep, I do tend to be pretty flexible, knowing that like I can still do my job, I can still perform even on short sleep or disrupted sleep, and that kind of sleep is more resilience than I think we sometimes give it credit for, or this. Maybe more, intense conversation socially about sleep has us believing sometimes where, I can go a couple nights on disrupted sleep and still be effective, and then find ways of managing that, throughout the day where needed, whether it might be an extra cup of coffee one day, it might be asking for flexibility around meeting times another day, something like that.
A lot of people don't prioritize sleep. They get it when they can, and this is actually like focusing on, hey, I need this to be the best person I can be the following day or beyond, right?
And even like this is useful for me getting to where I want to go. I tend to see it as a facilitator for me showing up in the way that I want to show up, rather than kind of feeling like an obligatory thing that's another thing I need to do, if that makes sense, right? Like it's a useful part of recovery and performance that for the athletes we work with, like their training is intense and they are diligent about it and they work very hard at it for not so many chances to go show it off, right? And so we kind of recommend that they approach their recovery the same way as a part of their training, which can feel counterintuitive. Asking people to kind of be still and relax and calm and quiet and sleep and all that stuff can sometimes be counterintuitive, but it's kind of seen as part of that holistic picture of performance. You know, I think something that we tend to talk about a lot is that sleep is a homeostatic response. Like our body knows how to sleep, and our job isn't to really control for sleep or make it happen. It is to set conditions for our body to do what it already knows how to do, right? So I think I like to include that because I do think it can sometimes feel like one more thing or one more stressor. And when we're in the mindset that sleep is something we have to do, or that short sleep is going to impact us negatively, it can create an autonomic nervous system response or a stress response, right? That's counterproductive to sleep onset. And so we can actually get in our own way that way. And so I do like to kind of come back to, yeah, sleep is important and it is a part of your training and it is facilitative of performance, and your body knows how to do it. Your body will do it. Our job is just to set the conditions appropriately for your needs. So, yeah, like prioritize it without it being kind of the
Sure.
be all end all, right? And
You
remind people that they've got the skill.
we've all been in that spot where we know where we should be sleeping and we keep rolling over, looking at the clock, saying, "Why am I not asleep yet? Why am I not asleep yet?"
Yeah.
But
Yeah, I
you
had a great colleague who she used to say, you know, we don't choose sleeplessness, but we do choose whether we suffer or not.
Yeah.
And I thought that was lovely. Yeah, well
Your
said.
body will fall asleep when it's ready to, I suppose. You can't force
Yeah.
it to, right?
Yes, exactly.
If you want to find out more about how high-level athletes are using sleep and how you can apply the same principles to maximize your own performance at work, at school, or just in life, you can go to usopc.org/sleep. Thank you for joining us on the last quest for gold of 2025. Hope you're having a great holiday season. We'll see you right back here next week in 2026 when we talk with an American figure skater who's looking to take a major step toward her Olympic comeback. I'm Ryan Burrow. We'll see you then.